Hello, you're listening to Ready, Set, Go Real Estate Investing Podcast, presented by Brandon Elliott. This show will be going over all aspects of real estate investing and is intended to educate, motivate, and prepare you to take action on your first or next real estate investment. For more information, please visit BrandonElliottInvestments.com. Thank you for listening and enjoy.
Welcome back, everyone, to Ready, Set, Go Real Estate Investing Podcast. I'm your host, Mr. Brandon Elliott. I want to thank all the listeners for subscribing and sharing all the love lately. You guys are amazing. If you have not already, hit that subscribe button. What are you waiting for? Do that right now. Listen to a couple episodes and then get back to us with that five-star review. Greatly appreciate all love, all the support. But today we are in for a hell of a treat. What's crazy about real estate is that there's 30 plus ways to make money in it, right? There's dozens of ways that you can get creative with real estate, how you can make an impact in your community, within your finances, within your family, and start building yourself some incredible generational wealth. And I met Amid at another mastermind event in Boardroom with Ken Clothier, and it's been life-changing in many ways for me working one-on-one with Ken, and I'm sure, you know, it echoes just like everybody that I talked to within that room, basically. But what's cool about your situation is that you started off doing some real estate development with your father kind of growing up, right? And then just running with this. And so today's, you know, 2024, you've done over $100 million in real estate, commercial assets, real estate, you know, retail space, and overall just development, right? So that's not little numbers, right? So I really like when I'm in big boy groups that are just doing some crazy, you know, awesome numbers. And I'm sure you have some big goals that you want to take down even more. But yeah, man, I'm just excited to have you on here. So how we doing today?
Good, man. How are you?
I'm blessed, dude. I'm excited to have you on. So tell me more about how you grew up, what area, and then why real estate? Your dad was already doing a little bit of it, or how did you guys start working together?
You know, starting at the beginning, you know, born and raised here in Southern California, right? Outside of LA in the San Gabriel Valley. Born in Arcadia, which is, you know, known to be next door to Pasadena, Tournament of Roses, the whole nine yards. Grew up out of that neighborhood. And I grew up in gas, my dad's gas station. You know, I'm the son of an immigrant. You know, and every Middle Eastern person out there, they either worked in the gas station, they owned a gas station, or they were affiliated with the gas station one way or another. So my dad had a gas station and I grew up pumping gas. You know, that's what I did. And all through high school and all through college, I was pumping gas. It took me 7 years to get through college because I was working 7 days a week in a gas station. So it took a while. And after I graduated college, I got a job as a commercial real estate broker at a company called CB. It's called CB now, but it's CBRE back in the day. And doing industrial investment and development, leasing and sales work out here in the San Gabriel Valley, Inland Empire, where it's really booming in industrial product. You know, just warehouse after warehouse after warehouse was being built and bought, sold, leased. And I was a part of that for many, many years. And while I was a broker, you know, my dad got to an age, said, you know, I can't keep working in the gas station. We can't keep our family in this business. So we finally sold that gas station. And took that money, and with my relationships in commercial real estate, I found some apartment complexes out in Phoenix to start investing into. And we invested into a number of complexes out there in Phoenix, kind of just cashed out, refi, rolled it, you know, got a couple hundred units out there. And all the while, started buying some small pieces of land out here in Southern California and started working on some developments, right? So as I was as I was brokering, we were on the side investing in developing smaller projects. Then I rolled from a commercial broker into managing a commercial construction company, a contractor, right? And I was involved in a lot bigger development projects, right? They weren't all mine. I was part of a team. I was helping build them. You know, I don't, you know, say they're all mine. I don't want to be one of these fake internet gurus that say I own 10,000 doors and I've done $100 million in transactions all by myself. No, I was part of a team.
And you got $5. You got $5 in each of them, right?
That's it. You know, and you know, but you know, being part of these large development teams, you learn a lot. You know, you got from the developer, the contractor, the architect, the engineer, the superintendents, inspectors, the etc. Like you're working with dozens and dozens of people of bringing these large projects together. So I was part of that team. I learned a lot of the development process through that. And now just continuing on, have rolled into more and more just developing property now. At the same time, still investing in some of that multifamily product that we started with back in the day. And so I'm out here now just, you know, running and gunning, developing a bunch of industrial multifamily developments here in Southern California, as well as owning investments in Phoenix and then developing multifamily and single family properties out in the Dallas area as well. So, you know, it's a 20-year progress or process to get here, but I'm here now.
I love it. A couple things. So for the family, why was the pain point for your dad to get out of the gas business? What was that about?
It's really management intensive, really labor intensive, right? You know, you're 7 days a week, you know, 18 hours a day. And like us, we had a lot of family members that were working, me and my brothers, my father, we all were working there.
Yeah.
And one, it's good income. I'm not going to lie, it's a very good income, but it's also very labor intensive, right? And it's also can be dangerous sometimes depending on the area. You know, my brother was held up. I've gotten threatened. I've gotten fist fights. I've seen my father in fist fights. This business is very active. So you need to be, you know, that type of person. So if you want to move into more of a passive or more of a growth type, you know, mindset, you need to kind of transition from just running the day to day and getting into more and more of the long-term passive type income.
I like that. And then, so obviously the stress of that and just all the headaches that come with it, he started seeing you in real estate, right? So it was kind of like a no-brainer to do that switch over.
It kind of fit just right because you know, we're getting, you know, through the gas station business that have many of those. And me being in commercial real estate, it's like, hey, look, if there's a better opportunity, a better path, take this family and take our business and start growing and expanding into a different direction. Where, you know, at a gas station, if it's, you know, 3 a.m. on a Sunday morning and somebody crashes into a pump, they're calling you, you're right? Yeah. But if you have an apartment complex and you have a management team and it's 3 a.m. and a pipe breaks, they're calling the management company because they're paid to handle that, right?
Yeah.
So it kind of gives a little bit different direction in terms of hands-on management. You know, what do you have to do? What are you responsible for? And so I don't need to wake up at 3 a.m. to drive down to a gas station and fix a pump versus a management company calling the repair guy out versus me.
Yeah, the management piece, it's a big important factor here. So how many gas stations did you guys own?
Towards the end of it, we're just down to a couple, like two. But over the years, I think my father's full career in it, he owned up to 12 or 15 of them over the years. Yeah.
Cool. Okay. Awesome. And then, so why real estate for you? You started going down that path. Who inspired you?
I was a teacher of mine in college. You know, the last year of college, I was, you know, looking at, you know, going, getting a business and finance degree. Yeah. And I had a teacher who, you know, I had a very good relationship with. I had a lot of good classes with. And he was the head or the president of a real estate investment development company here in Southern California.
Nice.
And he and I, you know, conversations and stuff, he guided me into working with a friend of his who was, you know, the local president of CB here in Southern California and was able to get a job through him because, you know, me excelling in my real estate and finance classes is kind of a natural pathway for me because it's something I really enjoyed, I was naturally good at, and it just allowed me to continue down that path.
What type of real estate deals have you done? Have you done all different type of mixtures or like what's your favorite?
You know, I've done a little bit of everything, right? My career was mostly commercial real estate, which was, you know, industrial warehouses, as well as multifamily, right? So those are the two kind of sweet spots. As a broker, I was doing a lot of industrial. As an investor and developer, we're doing a lot of multifamily. You know, I've transacted single family for myself because I have a broker's license, right? I've refinanced our office and retail buildings because, you know, as an owner, you handle the active hands-on refinancing of those properties. On the development side, we're building industrial and multifamily properties. So it's a little bit of both, but you know, I really enjoy any project that allows me to push the standard, right? Like I want everyone in the market to say, holy cow, look at that building that was just built. Look at that project that just came out of the ground. That looks good. That kind of set the standard. So anything that gives me the opportunity of setting the standard and making every other developer out there wish they were doing it as good as I was, I'm happy.
Because
I want to just keep pushing it. Because if I push it, that means they're going to try harder to keep up with me. If they try harder to keep up with me, it just pushes me to go harder and harder, right? So yeah. I'm trying to create my own friendly competition by doing that.
I love that. I love that. I think as like a man, naturally, like it's in our DNA to just want to create and make something really something to be proud of, right? And yeah, to set a standard, right? So if you can still be within budget, make something that you're really proud of, and get everybody else to be jealous to start wanting to do the same damn thing, right, or improve it even better, you're just building up the whole community. I love that.
How many times have you driven around and you seen a new project come out of the ground and you're like, wow, that's really boring, that's really generic, really they could have done a whole lot better, but they're just being lazy.
I felt so bad for this one developer a couple years ago right down the street from me. Well, it's in Hillcrest, but they ended up trying to do something really like modern and retro to a certain degree. It was like this shiny red, but it just looks so horrible. Like the material, yeah, whatever it was, it looks so bad. And I felt like everybody was just like screaming at it. Like, ugh.
This is where architects start, yeah, designing on your dime, right?
Yep.
The architect is an expert, but it's up to you to guide the expert to in a direction that you want to go. Kind of say, hey, Mr. Architect, design me something that's going to be memorable. Then you got to end up with this big giant red building you're talking about, right?
Yeah.
It's going to be an eyesore.
Yeah. Out of all the different types of investing that you've done for real estate, what do you think has been like the least resistant for you? It just came more natural.
You know, I would think it would have to be, like you said, industrial. Warehousing, yeah, distribution, just because I spent so many years as a broker and I drive every day those neighborhoods, it become almost like a second home to me, right? Like I know all the streets, all the buildings, all the properties, all the pieces of dirt. I know what will work, what will not work, just because I spent so many years doing it, right? And I really enjoy it too. So I think industrial has been really easy for me. Multifamily as well, just because you get to create something that has a very lasting presence to it as well.
Yeah, I love that. What do you think about multifamily right now with rates? A lot of multifamily is kind of like either upside down or a little underwater in some cases. People are weathering out the storm.
It's a good question because, you know, on one hand, I think, hey, multifamily, residential, single family, what have you not, whether it's single or multifamily, residential is always a good investment to get into, right?
Yep.
But you have all these, what I call a hood hopper, right? You know, you're from... You know, I'm from East LA, right? Well, what if I went from East LA to Compton? I'd be hopping hoods. These are the people like, oh, I'm going to be a single family fix and flip guy. And then all of a sudden, multifamily gets hot. So I'm going to jump into the multifamily. Oh, all of a sudden, multifamily slows down. I'm going to jump into the industrial, right? These are the people who get in trouble, right? So when you see all these projects and all these investments having trouble right now, it's because these people have not done the work. You just jumped into it because it was hot, popular. Right. It's like the people who jumped into NFTs, and once NFTs slowed down, they jumped into, and now once crypto slowed down, they jumped into Web 3.0. When that slowed down, they jumped. So these are the people who just jump to whatever's hot at the moment. And when they do, they get into trouble. They didn't do their homework. They didn't, you know, study the market. They didn't see what it takes to really be a long-term investor in this project. And what they did is they just jumped into it and they jumped in without looking and they got caught and they're in trouble. Those are the people that are having trouble in multifamily right now. The people who know what they're doing have done the homework and they're around for the long term and they've done the correct underwriting and they've done the correct financing and they manage correctly. Those are the people who are doing just fine right now.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah. And who could have known that the interest rates were going to go up so many times so quick? Yeah. It's pretty wild.
It is true. But you also should be smart enough to know that you shouldn't get into something for the short term. Sure. Oh, these are the people who got in for the 2-year, you know, variable rate, then it fixed and it changed and stuff like that. You should know better than to do something like that.
Yeah, yeah. That's true. Especially in wild times like that we've been in the last couple of years. You don't know what's going to happen.
If you want to get in and get out quickly with a rate that is only locked in for a year or two, that's fine if you're flipping something.
Yep.
But if you want to do it for the long term, it's not smart.
Yeah.
You know, that's what happened.
I like that. So all of your properties, things that you jump into, investments, you're looking for not the quick in and out, but more long term to a certain degree, right? It depends on the project, but.
Yeah, it all depends. I got short term. I need short term income and cash flow, and I got long term, you know, legacy type property, right? So the stuff that I build to sell, the industrial buildings and stuff like that, I can get in and get out of a project like that in 2 years from buying the dirt to entitling it to construction to sell, that could be a 2-year process, right? So that's constantly going for cash flow, right? I'm constantly building, buying, and selling. And then the bigger projects, the multifamily investments and developments, that's the long-term legacy tech stuff. That's the kind of stuff that goes into your portfolio for the long term, right? And produces long-term cash flow and appreciation.
Yeah. So for some of the developments, you know, buying the land, getting all the permits, entitlement, all that process, it takes a long time. So during that time frame and funding it and the team, because there's no I in team, right? There's a lot of people that end up making up the whole project and sure. a lot of high paying people because they're the smart ones getting the stuff done. So how are you funding things like this? Are you raising capital or is it just within the company, the family, the business? You guys have been doing it a good 20 years now. So
yeah. Well, most of it's mostly internal, right? Yeah, you take existing assets and existing equity or cash flow or what have you not, and you roll those into your projects, right? Sure. That's why it's always important to have those assets like those multifamily properties that can produce a consistent cash flow month after month, right? To fund these new developments. But I do it a little bit differently. A lot of people go out there and they'll raise 90, 95% of the money, right?
Sure.
Nothing out of their own pocket. I don't do that. Nor do I want to do that. The smaller projects, I don't need outside investors, developers, because I'm able to do that internally.
Sure.
So for these larger projects, I will bring in outside investors, but I will only bring them in to a point where it's only a 30 or 40% position.
Okay.
I don't want to be the guy that raises 90 or 100% of the money and I have no skin in the game. And when things go south, I bail. We see that happen all over the place. Hey, I got nothing in this project. I put it together. It's going south. I'm out of here. You guys are left holding the bag. Yeah. I don't want to be that guy ever, right? So what I do is I maintain a majority ownership and a majority equity position in a project because if something does go wrong or something does go south or the market changes or the leasing goes up and down, you know, in terms of vacancy, or you know, there's a change in materials that the project costs more or less. I want to be the guy that the investor sees rolling up my sleeves and doing the hard work. I want them to see, hey, when shit gets tough, Ahmed is the first guy on the front line handling business, right? This is the guy we want to invest with. This is the guy we want to back up. This is the guy we want leading the team versus that guy that raised all the money, but has nothing in it himself. And he's the first guy out the door when shit hits the fan.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah. And you see a lot of people doing that. So it's very rare to actually see it the way that you're doing it, which is definitely, I think, who wouldn't want to invest in a project like that when, you know, they're secured, plus you have so much more skin in the game.
So much. Like, if anyone's going to really lose, it's going to be me.
Yeah, like, and you're not going to let that happen.
Hell no. Not in a million years. Yeah,
that's right. Sure. That's right. I love that. So talk to me. You were mentioning, you know, other people losing their shirts or, you know, just learning curves, you know. So out of 20 years doing this in the game, I'm sure there's a couple learning curves to be said for some of the listeners. What are a couple things that just like stand out the most to you that were like, oh, man, I wish I didn't go through that. But at the same time, what a blessing. This is what I've learned from it.
A couple things. You know, the biggest thing I try to share with people is getting past your limiting beliefs, right? I don't think people ever really realize how good they are at so many things, right? Because people will keep you down and people will not show you how good you are because they want to keep you, right? So what we could definitely do is if you're able to step outside yourself and look at yourself from a third person, right? And say, wow, look at him. He accomplished so much. He's had so many successes. He's come so far without anyone's help. You can really do a whole lot more if you can see yourself in that position. So for me, I spend years and years building projects and being a part of the teams and being a contractor, subcontractor, project manager, what have you not, and being an integral part of these projects, right? But I always thought I was just another team member. I was just another guy on the job, another position, right? It wasn't until I took a step out and looked at myself from a third person and said, wow, look how much you've accomplished. Look how much you've done on your own. Look how much money you've made other people. Look how many deals you brought together and came into fruition, right? You didn't need anyone's help for that. You've done that, but you did that for someone else. Why don't you start doing that for yourself now?
Wow.
And that was the limiting belief, overcoming that limiting belief, saying, wow, I could actually do all this for myself that I've been doing for other people all these years. So that's a huge one right there.
Yeah. Did anybody help you come to that realization? Or was that just like a mindset shift of like, because some people find themselves in your same exact shoes of like, you know, working their ass off, doing it for other people. And then after they do it so many times, they're like, whoa, hold on a second.
Yeah.
You know, like, I think I could do this. I can do this for myself. I've done the whole thing.
You know, I really wish it came to me a lot sooner and a lot younger. And some people, they naturally figure this out, or some people are naturally encouraged to look at themselves from a third person. But to me, it was a series of some really massive, unfortunate events. And it all was like a 1-2-3 blow. You know, 2019, COVID happened. 2019, I get a divorce. 2019, I get sick. I'm in the hospital. 2019, my father has a couple strokes and passes away a little bit afterward. 2019, you know, the business world is flipped upside down. So all of these things happening to me all at the same time was really like a punch in the face. And it allowed me to take a step back and look at everything objectively from a third person standpoint. So it was really that those hard lessons that really forced me to look at myself unobjectively or from a different position, a different perspective, that allowed me to get past all those limiting beliefs, right? But unfortunately, it took all those difficult, you know, scenarios at a very late age in life versus wishing I'd figured that out when I was much younger.
Yeah. Damn, man. They say that the devil tries to kick you while you're down and you got fucking like ran over. That's a lot when
it rains, it pours, bro. When it rains, it pours.
Yeah. It does. But you know, that's a difference with like a victory type of mindset. Because it could have either made you or break you for sure.
Right.
And a lot of people out there, they give up like life. And there's a season, there's a time, there's anybody going through something catastrophic like that in all areas of your life. It's like, dude, that's not a punch to the face. That's like that's like the whole army, like trampling over you.
You know, but everyone has a different heart. You know, my heart was 2019. Your heart is different. And my heart isn't any different than your heart, right?
Yep.
Because to you, your heart and my heart, it's different, but to us, it feels the same. So whatever it takes for you to figure things out and to look at yourself from a third person position and say, wow, I've gone through a lot. I got kicked over and over and over again. I'm still standing. I have all these successes. I have all these skill sets. I have all these, you know, attributes that I can go, you know, use. Let me go do that.
Yeah. Right? I love that. Yeah. And it's very natural for people, especially in today's society, to judge off of like, yeah, well, you didn't go through it as much as I did or whatever. But, you know, at the end of the day, they went through their stuff. So it's like, whatever their trauma is, it's like, that's your truth. That's what you went through. That's all you know. So like that could be just as bad or even worse in some cases. So it's just like, that's your truth of whatever you're going through and how you come out, how you fight through that is really the key ingredient.
Your heart is your heart and my heart is my heart, and you or me are not any better or worse than each other. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
it
is
what it
is. Yeah. I love that. So talk to me about, because you're first gen, right, of immigration?
Were you born here?
Okay, yes. Cool. So I've always found like a work ethic is a little bit different, to say the least, when, you know, from your parents, just the mindset, like, I love how immigrant families, when they come here, they automatically think businesses. If they do work for somebody, they work for somebody for like a season to be able to get their stuff together, save up, like they grind to get money saved up to get their foot in the door, and then they figure it out.
True. I mean, it's, you know, I feel bad for anyone born after the year 2000.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, and I also feel bad if you're not the child of an immigrant, because you have things a little bit too easy.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that's for everyone, but maybe for many people it is.
Yeah.
Right. Because immigrants come to this country or to any country they immigrate to, and, you know, they have a survival mentality. They need to survive. Right. Yeah. They are new. They don't have any money. They don't have any relationships. They don't have any careers or jobs or education. They need to survive. So you have a very survival based mentality. And they pass it on to their kids. Like, you got to work hard. You got to scrap. You got to fight to get ahead in any way possible. So it teaches you to really, really work hard, right? Nothing is given to you and nothing is easy, right? And, you know, I appreciate that because, like I said, you know, working in a gas station, you know, half my life, I learned how to do everything myself.
Yeah.
Right. that mentality of hiring for it, paying for it, calling for it, spending money for it was non-existent. Like, hey, if it broke, you fix it. If it needed to get painted, you paint it. If it needed to be, you do it, right? No matter how much money you made, success you had, how much stature you had, you did it yourself. So I really get that kind of mentality that really showed me what hard work is, right?
Yeah.
So I can go right now, I'm in my 40s. I can go and wake up at 5 a.m., get to work at 6, work until 3 or 4 p.m., go to college and take a full, course load, and then study until 12 or 1 o'clock at night and do that for year after year after year. And that taught me hard work. And I can still do that to this day because it's ingrained in me, right? So long hours and hard work is easy for me. And I really appreciate that. That's one of the best things that could ever happen to you growing up, children of immigrants.
I love that. I'm always curious, like the inspiration behind it, because I feel like, like you said, like you typically within your culture, it's like jump into like a gas station, right? Yeah. I know with Jen's family and within like the Vietnamese culture, it's like a nail salon, right? And
sure.
Her parents have a nail salon. So I'm curious if it's like one of those things that you see other people within your culture in a new place, like, well, they're doing it. Like, I could do exactly the same thing. But it's the inspiration and seeing somebody that looks like you, talks like you, and similar in a different place that you're like, oh, I'll do the same exact thing.
100%. It's the path of least resistance, right? So you're an immigrant, you see a bunch of people from your culture in a certain business. One, you can get a job with them. Two, you can learn with them. And three, you can grow with them, right?
Yep.
The same thing with, Jen and the nail salons or the donut shops, what have you not. It's the path of least resistance for someone new in this country and to naturally, feel comfortable and safe being around people in their own culture. So it's the same thing. It's like you and me in the boardroom. If I was new in the boardroom and I saw all these people doing real estate, I'm going to naturally want to do real estate.
Yeah.
Right? Because my culture, my community is the boardroom and that's what everyone else is doing. So it's going to be easier for me to get into that kind of business than anything else.
Yeah. Yeah. Success isn't always taught. It's like it's caught. Like I've heard that saying so many times. It's like you are the average of the five people you hang out with the most. It's it's so true. When you're in that atmosphere, it just naturally happens.
Naturally.
But I was always like, damn, man, I wish I was an immigrant myself because I just didn't grow up with that same. I always feel like I'm so blessed. I grew up American poor,
Sure.
I call it American poor because we grew up on food stamps, Section 8 housing and help from like local social security as well as local churches. But it's like it's such a big, huge help in comparison to other countries.
Oh, yeah, because, it's the same. That's the same thing. Whether you're an immigrant or not, you're growing up with a survival mindset.
Yeah.
I need to eat. I need to live. I need to have a home. I need a roof over my head. I need to do anything possible to do that.
Yep.
Right? So whether you grow up American poor or an immigrant with $2 in your pocket or anything in between, it's the same thing. Having that mindset that I need to do whatever I need to do to make it, to live, to survive, and to grow and to succeed.
Yeah. I love that. How was it growing up with your parents? Was there certain things that they helped out a lot with or kind of just encouraged you to get at it and figure it out?
Not necessary. My father was the traditional, I'm going to go to work. I'm going to, provide for the family and that's it. We're not going to your baseball game. We're not, throwing basketballs around in the backyard or any of that stuff. It's like, he went to work, he came home, that was it, right?
Yeah.
And though, my whole life, I wanted to be a commercial airline pilot. That was my dream, right? Fly big planes around the world. That was my dream, but that wasn't encouraged. I was encouraged to go to school and then to work in the gas station and to have a life. I wasn't encouraged to go pursue my dreams or do anything like that. So it was more that survival mentality, meaning you don't have the liberty to pursue your dreams. You have to go and work hard. So it goes back to my parents, forcing me to work hard and learn that skill set and the mindset of the hard work. So, yeah, I didn't get to pursue my dreams, unfortunately, but now I can fly first class whenever I want, right? So it's one of those things. So there's a little bit of a balance and a payoff there, right? So
that's good. That's good. I love that. Talk to me, man. What are you working on now?
Right now, I'm just actually, trying to really balance the business, right? Because as we're, you and I are in this group and we're not necessarily focused on real estate. We're really focused on building a business, right? Real estate just happens to be the tool we use.
Yeah, the business. Yeah, yeah.
Right.
How many people are on your team currently?
My team are just a couple of us that, you know, are directly here in the office. But, you know, I have third-party management companies, architects, engineers, contractors, you know, third-party report providers, consultants. I mean, it's all based per job, right?
Sure.
So there may be 10 or 15 people on the team. There may be just two or three, depending on what phase of that project is going on at the moment.
Right? That makes sense.
So that's kind of where that's at. And right now, like I said, it's just really trying to learn how to grow the business, you know, why real estate is the tool that we use, right? But I need to grow a business. I need to balance that business. I need to balance income and expenses. I need to make sure, you know, enough money is coming in versus how much money is going out to pay for these projects. I need to make sure there's enough long-term investments versus short-term investments. So it's really about growing and balancing along the way because, you know, I was having lunch today with another member of the boardroom with us who's here in Orange County. And, you know, when I first came in the boardroom and I was talking to Kent, I was like, you know, I'm a gunslinger. I'm coming to town and I'm just like, you know, pow, pow, pow. I'm knocking them out, you know, one by one, knocking them out. Boom, they're done, right?
He's like, I know, brother. I'm like yeah. One of the same, right?
Right. But the thing is, though, but there's nothing behind that. I don't got a team. I don't got an army. I don't got supplies. I don't got a home base. I don't got any of that. I got nothing to back me up, right? So I need to go from the single gunslinger knocking deal after deal and, you know, technically a deal junkie. And I need to turn that into an army, right? Where I have divisions and generals and lieutenants and privates and tanks and aircraft. And, you know, just I need to create a whole system out of it. And that's what I'm doing right now.
That's so good. Have you invested in EOS? Have you been doing any of that stuff? Or is it needed within your team?
Not yet, just because our team here in the office is so small. There's just a few of us, right? Okay. But I really think in the next 12, 24 months, when a lot of these projects are going to break ground, that may need to happen as we're, you know, bringing more people in the office to manage those projects. Yeah.
I love it. Yeah, man. It's been a game changer for us. It's coming up on a year, but really, really like transformational within the business and just the organization and the culture. So it's been pretty damn good.
I mean, I love that. And I know I'm going to have to implement it, but I kind of feel like if it's just two or three of you, it may be a little bit premature, but it's going to be happening real soon though.
I love it. That's cool.
Yeah.
So what are some of the current projects that you have going on in the next, like, is there anything in the pipeline that you're working on or raising capital for?
Yeah, pipeline's real heavy. I'm just about ready to, tighten up some underwriting and go out and raise capital for a couple projects. So right now I got about half a dozen small industrial commercial projects that are going through the planning and permitting stages right now, anywhere from 5,000 square foot, you know, buildings up to 30 and 40,000 square foot distribution warehouses. And in between, I'm even looking at taking one of the projects that I was hoping to do self-storage with and possibly going into a medical office building with that, right? And then on the larger side for the long-term property, you know, I got a couple hundred units going through planning and permitting here in Southern California. And I got a couple hundred units going through the entitlement process out there in North Dallas in Texas.
Nice.
So all in all, there's about, you know, that pipeline right there is about $300 million worth of projects.
Shit.
It'll probably take me from now for the next 36 to 48 months to build it all out.
Yeah.
But I got to constantly keep adding to that pipeline because as other projects are done, I need to start lining up what's going to happen in the next 36, 48, you know, 60, 72 months out. You know, I got to constantly fill that pipeline. Because I can't build everything and all of a sudden I'm done with everything and I gotta start from scratch. I gotta keep that pipeline constantly full of projects at some stage of the development process.
Yeah, that makes sense. How are you typically finding leads and like pipeline like this?
That's the problem.
Yeah.
It's all me. You know, it's all me. That's one of my superpowers. I know where to how to spot a deal. I know how to find a deal. I know how to find an opportunity, right? And I'm really good at it. It's just one of my superpowers, right? But I can't spend all day looking for deals. I got to go and execute, right?
Yep.
So I got to start converting that from just myself into more of a funnel where deals are starting to come to me and I'm starting to evaluate those. So I'm going from being the gunslinger to creating a system and having a team and start feeding me those deals. So that's kind of one of the things I'm working on right now, is like creating those opportunities where those deals come my way.
I love that. Yeah. Talk to me, you mentioned about kind of like a ratio that you're trying to get that fine balance with, you know, active income versus passive income and so forth. Right. Where do you like to kind of be within that threshold? I know it's something you're working on right now, so yeah. I won't hold you to it, but like what would be like a good day for you?
You know, on just kind of like a cash flow type thing, I want to see at least twice the amount of money coming in versus what's going out.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
So let's say this project or property I have, it brings, you know, into the company $100,000 a year net. Right.
Yeah.
But I have all these expenses of running the business and paying for architects and engineers. Well, I want that money coming in to be twice as much as what's going out.
Yep.
So if I got $50,000 a year in expenses on architects, engineers, my rent, my employees, my, you know, architects, whatever it is, I want twice that money coming in, because I also need to save some of that money. I need to reinvest that into also other investments as well. So it's not just going to pay for the current expenses I have, but that money is also going to get redeployed into more passive investments that, you know, come my way.
Yeah, that's good. And then the passive income?
Passive income, that's, you know, either developing multifamily and keeping it, or buying existing multifamily and keeping it, right? Those are that's the passive income track that I'm trying to go down right now.
I love it. As far as the future, where do you think, you know, the market, we're in a presidential election year, and just overall, there's a lot of uncertainty in the next couple of years. What do you think is kind of the future with rates? They've already mentioned that it's going to come down, but it hasn't yet, and so forth. So, yeah.
You know, everyone is an expert. Right. Oh, the rates are too high. This is too high. Oh, no, I'm not going to do this. I'm like, you know, you're full of shit.
Yeah.
I don't care if the rates are 20%. If I'm still making cash on that investment because I have a 20% rate, I'm going to do it. All these people say, oh, I'm not going to execute it until the rates come down. Well, I'm sorry, but if there's cash flow, I'm going to execute, right? It's like cash is king. Rates go up and down all the time. But if I'm able to make money, I'm going to execute. So that's where, you know, these hood hoppers, these internet gurus, these, you know, these experts come into play. Rates are too high. You should wait. You should do this. You should do this. You should do this. I'm like, why would I wait to execute on an opportunity? Because if I wait, that opportunity can go away.
Yeah.
Right. If there's an opportunity in front of me and the rates are high, I'm still going to execute.
Yeah.
Maybe the rates will come down, then I'll refinance.
That's right.
But I still have cash flow. It's still making money for me. I am going to execute on it.
Yeah. Yeah. It always drives me crazy when somebody is stressed out about the numbers. And like, even if you're doom's gloom and you think that the rates are just going to keep going up and up, if you're cash flowing today, lock it in. Lock it in, baby.
Because
you're saving money, right? And if it goes the opposite way, then, you know, you get to refinance. So
right.
It's a win-win. You just got to keep buying deals.
And if the rates go up, you're locked in and you're still making money, right? It's like, hey, why would you buy a Lamborghini for $1 million? They're not worth $1 million.
Yeah,
true. It's not worth $1 million. But if you can go buy it for $1 million because you know you can make $1.2 million if you sold it tomorrow, or if you're making, you know, you're getting a 20 or 30% return on your investment. Yeah, I'm going to go buy that Lamborghini for $1 million. It may not be worth $1 million, but the cash flow that it's producing justifies that transaction.
Yeah. Now I know how you feel about the rates, which is good. But overall, how do you feel about the market in general?
You know, I think you can never go wrong if you're doing the right thing, meaning you're investing, you're developing, you're in a product type that is solid, right? So what I mean solid is you're constantly evolving with the times. Why am I going so heavy on multifamily? Because people will always need a place to live. Why am I going heavy on industrial, which I've always been heavy in, but I'm going even more heavy now? It's because of the Amazon phenomenon. Shopping centers, grocery stores, malls, they're shrinking. They're going out of business. Why? Because everyone is having everything delivered to the house. So what am I going to do? I'm going to find real estate that helps facilitate that transaction, which is industrial warehousing and distribution centers.
Makes sense. I love it. And then you're doing triple net leases on those, so you don't need to worry about anything?
No, because most of the industrial stuff I will sell.
Okay.
You know, So maybe I'll sell it to a third party delivery company who needs a place to store their vans, to hold their product and to, you know, do maintenance, right? Or maybe it's a small vendor who sells conveyor belts to Amazon for their warehouses, right? Those are the guys that I'm trying to facilitate for, right? They're actually feeders to the larger distribution type companies, right?
I love it. That makes sense. Cool, man. Dude, this is exciting. I'm excited for you. So you have a bunch in the pipeline right now. You said 300 million?
Yes.
Yeah, over the next 2 years?
Probably over the next 3 to 4. The two larger projects are pretty much, you know, a 24 to 36 month construction timeline. So
yeah,
it all depends. And I don't build it all at once. Everything gets phased just to be careful so I'm not overextending myself. These people who come and they build everything at once and the market changes, well, you're in trouble. I rather phase my developments and build a piece at a time. So if something does change, I'm not overextended. So that's why my timeline's a little bit longer.
Okay. So what do you mean by that exactly? Like you're doing it bits and pieces of the construction. So you're only financing portions of it at a time?
So, for example, my large project here in Southern California, my apartment complex here in the Inland Empire, right? One of the buildings. So as you see all around, they're building these large 5-story buildings with 300 apartments in them, right? It's one or two buildings, right? They're building they can only build the building at once. Well, I'm building a couple smaller buildings.
Sure. Gotcha.
I'm building one or two at a time, right? And then rolling into the next ones once those are completed, right? Because if I'm building, if I got a $100 million project, but I only got a $10 or $20 million in construction money out at the moment.
Yeah.
Then if the market changes, I'm only liable for that $10 or $20 million. I'm not liable for that full $100 million that was deployed, right?
Yep.
So I'm taking a bite at the apple bit by bit and not overextending myself. So it's like, hey, you know, you want to go build a dozen houses and call it, you know, credit counseling, you know, housing community, right?
Yeah.
You know, Lennar, KB, they don't build 100 houses at once. They'll build 5 at a time.
Yep.
They'll sell those 5 and they'll roll into the next 5 and they'll roll into the next 5, right? Because they're hedging their bet and they're tying to the market. And the best part of it is if the first 5 sold and there's demand for the second 5, well, they'll raise the prices on the second 5. And the third 5, they'll raise prices even more. So they're actually making more money at the same time. They're also hedging their risk.
Yep. I love that. Yeah. They hedge their bets, basically their risk. And then they also kind of demand or supply the market right there.
They time the market, and if the market continues to go up, they're able to actually change their pricing. Because if they sold the first 100 houses for the same price versus, you know, increasing the price every 5 or 10 houses, they could be making a whole lot more that way.
That's so true. I love that. I haven't thought of it like that. So, yeah, that's really good.
Yep.
I love it, man. Well, you just gave almost an hour of your time for me and the audience. What could we do to give back to you?
Like I said, just go build better. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Spend a little bit of time and push people to do better, right? Whether it's your contractor, your architect, your engineer, your service provider, whatever it is, they will give you the basic. But if you push them, they'll give you so much more.
Ooh, that's so good. Yeah. Man, I love that, man. How can we get a hold of you?
No, I spend way too much time on Instagram, so you can find me on that. Yeah.
Ahmed
Builds Better. Yeah.
What is it again?
Ahmed Builds Better.
Okay. I love that. That's so cool. Yeah. Man, that's a good slogan there too.
Fine, man. You know, I just, you know, if I can push people to do better, then it pushes me to do better, and then we all win, you know?
Hell yeah. Yeah. I love it, man. Well, I appreciate your time today. It was an awesome episode. This one's definitely for the books. Guys, cool. If you haven't connected with Ahmed yet, you definitely want to do that. ASAP, he's a wealth of knowledge and definitely a go-giver. So by all means, if you found value in this, make sure you reach out to him, share some love with him. And then if you guys want to get a hold of me, you can always do so on Instagram. It's Brandon Elliott Investments. Also, check out our new page on Instagram. It's Credit Counsel Elite. You can connect with me on Facebook as well, facebook.com/Brandon Elliott Investor. And then if you guys are trying to figure out exactly what the hell we do here at Credit Council Elite. We are teaching business owners just like you how to be able to get up to $500,000 in the next 30 to 90 days at 0% interest so that you can grow and scale either your business, your corporation, or jump into real estate just like we have. So check out creditcouncilelite.com. That's www.creditcouncilelite.com. You can watch a quick 10-minute video, understand more about what we got going on, and then jump on a call with us to get a second opinion. And then, yeah, all those subscribers lately, you guys are amazing. For Ready, Set, Go Real Estate Investing Podcast, if you haven't already, hit that subscribe button. You'll get the newest notification every single Monday when the new episode drops. And then leave that 5-star review after listening to a few. I greatly appreciate all love, all the support. You guys are amazing. We'll catch you on the next episode. Till next time, God bless. Amid, appreciate you, brother.
Got it.
See you guys.
This has been another episode of Ready, Set, Go Real Estate Investing Podcast, brought to you by Brandon Elliott. For more information, please visit BrandonElliottInvestments.com. Also, please don't forget to like, share, and leave a comment below. Thanks again for joining. Until next time, God bless.